spectrum. The show provides a wide range of news and competing opinions. The commentaries, beliefs, and viewpoints expressed by segment hosts and guests do not necessarily represent those of WJSU-FM, Jackson State University, or its administrators. The content of this program is for informational and/or entertainment value only and not meant as an endorsement or recommendation in lieu of professional guidance on relevant topics.
It's the full spectrum. It's the full spectrum. We've got news, entertainment, interviews, and so much more. It's the full spectrum.
On today's show, we hear from Jackson City Councilman DeKeitha Stamps about the continuing problems with the city's water and other issues. And are those gas prices as good as they seem? Our money man Jim Griffith joins us to talk about the pros and the cons of the bargain basement gas prices. Welcome to the Full Spectrum for March 3rd, 2016. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. Time now to check out the forecast from WeatherVision's Edward St. Pay.
Our forecast update for tonight, well, the frontal system's moving out. And with that being the case, we should see clearing across the area through the evening. Partly cloudy to clearing skies. A little cooler, 44 tonight with northerly winds at 10 behind the front. A great Friday for Friday, sunny skies, temperatures in the low 60s, northerly winds at 10. Clear Friday night, 42 the low, northerly winds again at 5. Then the weekend, a great weekend, sunny with highs at 71 degrees. And even through Monday, mostly sunny skies continuing with temperatures in the mid-70s then. Edward St. Pay reporting.
Jackson City Council met Tuesday to once again consider imposing a state of emergency because of high levels of lead in the water in some homes in the city. Joining us now with the latest is Councilman DeKeitha Stamps. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Great to have you. So tell me about the meeting on Tuesday.
Well, for the last few weeks, I've been proposing an emergency declaration to do a few things, specifically to expand testing. The testing normally costs about $20 per household to conduct. And in order to give the folks the full comfort I feel they need, we need to test all the houses.
Yeah. Right.
So that'll cost roughly $1.5 million.
What do you know so far? Because this is a national story now, people wondering, is it isolated to certain neighborhoods or do you not know the extent of the problem?
Until you do the proper testing, you don't know the extent. But I do know that 90% of the homes that were tested positive to some degree of lead, and only 13 of those homes tested above the actionable levels. Me personally, I would like to see no level of lead in any water, but and I just won't know that until we do testing across the whole city.
Okay, I want to play something the mayor said. This was not the last council meeting, but when you first asked for the state of emergency and there was a little dust up there. So let's hear what the mayor had to say about why he didn't impose a state of emergency.
We did not want to create a panic, particularly in the climate called Flint. And so we don't have a Flint problem. We have homes that have issues with lead, but we don't have a water source, a treatment center that's sending out lead-filled water. That's not what we have. Mm-hmm. And it was my opinion, as well as some of the opinion of the council, that if we did that, you know, how do we control that message? We declare a state of emergency, and then we come back and say, oh, but by the way, the water's fine.
Right. So the mayor said in that meeting, so everybody can get a grasp of it, he said that he didn't want to create a state of panic.
Right.
By declaring a state of emergency. Well, what I'm saying is, and what I said a month ago, is if you declare the state of emergency, similar to when tornadoes come. Last week, the governor declared a state of emergency before the storm even hit. And then it came back and didn't even cause that much damage, right?
Right.
You're able to contain the messaging. and you're able to decipher through the information, you're able to go through it and control what's happening. Now, you come back a few weeks later because of our inaction, we can't control the messaging anymore. It's other sources and other people controlling the messaging. So from a leadership perspective, I felt that it would be incumbent on us to declare a state of emergency first, then garner resources, because we know the city doesn't have the resources to spend money testing, you know, houses for lead. I don't want them to have to fire police officers just to turn around and buy testing kits. You know, I want FEMA and the federal government and the state government to come in and help with these costs, and also to help with the solutions for some of these folks' houses.
In my mind, this is clearly different, but he says when he, you know, months ago tried to get a state of emergency dealing with infrastructure issues, mm-hmm. You were opposed to that.
Correct. Correct.
And clearly in my mind is different, but respond to why it's different.
Well, it's different because when you just say infrastructure, that's broad, right? I know the names, addresses, and telephone numbers of people who have tested positive for lead. That's specific. And in this issue, we have a specific problem, but also it's a public health component attached to it that I felt rated the severity of a emergency declaration. There's a true endpoint to this as well, assessing the scope of the problem throughout the city and, in turn, helping to fix those problems. And when you fix it, it's over. But see, with infrastructure is ongoing. So if you declare a state of emergency for infrastructure, at what point is the state of emergency over?
What happens if it turns out that the source of the water, like if it ends at the meter, whatever, and it goes into the house? Suppose the water isn't coming out of the city system with lead, and it really is in some of these homes where we know people cannot afford to get the piping changed.
Right.
Do you feel like the city could still face some liability? Or,
well, when it gets to a point where people have been identified with having lead in their homes, and it's not the city's fault, now what happens? I'm not going to sit there and let those people be unhealthy, or in some cases let them die. We need the federal government to come in and help with those problems, because the city is not responsible for repiping folks' houses or buying water filters for folks' houses and things like that. And that's what the emergency declaration was about. It was just about testing, but also, what do you do once it's test positive? What assistance is in place?
Right. You know, it's a little scary. I've asked a couple of people this lately, mm-hmm. about, you know, is government able anymore to meet its responsibility to citizens? Because if mm-hmm. you add just Jackson mm-hmm. and Flint, Michigan together, you're talking billions of dollars in infrastructure repairs that are needed. And right. That's only two cities.
Well, and this is what happens when you have, in our history of America, anytime you have protracted wars, right? It's a drain on the reinvestment of the homeland. And, you know, this happened every time we go to war. But now we're in this perpetual war situation. We've spent $6 trillion on wars. That money would normally be spent on the homeland, right? And this is what happens. Your country will crumble if you stay in a constant war. That's why these global wars must end.
Well, speaking of budget issues, mm-hmm. what is it looking like? Because, as you know, the water, and for years the repaving the streets has been an issue. And the mayor said when he was on a couple of days ago that the repaving is set to start this month. Is that your understanding as well?
Right. Well, we've given the administration everything they've asked for, and I've given them a clear mandate. 2016 must be your year. Your year to perform for the citizens of Jackson, the city council. You've asked for several things, and the overwhelming majority of what you've asked for, you've gotten. So now the people in the city council want you to perform. We want your people to perform. We want you to be successful, quite frankly, because their success is tied to our success. And we've done our part, so now it's up to the administration to bring home the bacon.
What has taken so long? You're saying, you know, that's one of the questions I asked the mayor. What is, especially the entertainment district, and it's been years, you know, Ferris Street, the whole downtown area that they've been talking, and it seems like very little has happened.
Well, on our side, the city council declared several parcels, entertainment district, opened those things up to the incentives that, that take place in those things. We've passed more legislation in the last, you know, year and a half to create a fertile ground for entertainment and industry. And so now we just need other levels of government to step up to the plate and stop incentivizing other businesses to leave the city and stay out of the city, but also to help us grow.
That'll be a good place to pick up. We're talking with Jackson City Councilman DeKeitha Stamps. We'll be right back after this break.
Y'all not hot making.
Business news is everywhere these days. The economy is the story. You hear about it on TV, online, even on your cell phone. But you don't always get the context you need. That's what Marketplace brings you. We explain how complicated Wall Street maneuvers affect your 401k or what a Fed rate cut could do to your mortgage. Marketplace, it's the business show for the rest of us.
For Money Matters, it's Marketplace. Each afternoon at 5:30 on Cool and Current, WJSU.
WJSU has upgraded its internet stream. Hear music and news on our website like never before. The crystal clear clarity of HD radio online at WJSU.org. Don't believe me? Then listen online at WJSU.org for music clarity akin to a CD. Go ahead, I dare you.
We're back with Jackson City Councilman DeKeitha Stamps. You are doing a fabulous job, Meredith Hairston. Fabulous. Okay. We are talking, you know, you talked about businesses moving out. That brings up some of the stuff that's been going on over at the legislature. You know, Josh Harkin's bill with the airport. I'm going to do a show on that next week. Your reaction, DPS, the Department of Public Safety headquarters moving out. It seems like Rankin County is trying to suck the life out of Jackson.
Well, you know, we've got to push back against that. It's time for us to have a true Jackson First campaign and not apologize for doing things in our own best interest. For a long time, other levels of government have been incentivizing businesses to leave Jackson or to grow somewhere else, like the $27 million the state gave to the outlet mall to build there. Well, what if that investment was made in the Metro Center, right? $30 million of Costco and money to Sam's Club and Best Buy and all these different types of entities, but not to mention those businesses, even the state agencies, the tax revenue places in Clinton, the birth certificate places over in Ridgeland and several other places. But what we have to do is not just look at what other agencies or entities are doing against our interest. What are we doing for our interest?
What are you doing for your interest?
Well, one of the biggest things is I've proposed that we annex all the property that we own that are outside of the city limits of Jackson in Rankin County.
How much is the airport and what else?
Well, the airport's already inside the city limits, but there's areas along Lakeland Drive that are ripe for development that the city of Jackson owns that property, but it's not inside the city limits of Jackson. Like where that movie theater is and that Sleep Inn is right there by the airport on Lakeland Drive.
Right.
Well, that's the city of Jackson owns that property. They lease it from the city of Jackson, but it's not inside our corporate limits.
So what are the options? What can you do?
We annex it.
And what is the response of your fellow councilman?
Well, Councilman Ashley Foots agrees with it, and several others agree with it. It's just a long time ago we agreed to not annex property in Rankin County. And
but it's stood a new by game, it. Right?
Well, they changed the rules of the game. They started this war, but we're going to ensure that Jackson finishes this war and comes out ahead.
You know, I talked to Josh Harkins, who wrote that bill, and he says there's no he says there's no race component to this.
It's, no, it's
about,
not.
You know, you don't believe that either.
No.
Benny
no.
Thompson thinks it is. But well, you think...
Put it this way. Race may play a role, but the real role is money power. This is a money power conversation. And as long as we keep it at the money power conversation, we don't get bogged down in all of the history that comes with the race conversation. And we can talk professionally. This is evident. We approached the Mississippi Aviation Association to join us in opposition of this bill. And they did, mainly because we kept the facts and issues up front, left the race conversation in the car, and said, okay, what will happen to the Mississippi Aviation Association if this bill goes through?
Okay.
And we listed the negative effects thereof, possible state takeover of other airports around the state, losing licenses from the FAA and those types of things. And they, we were able to garner support that we wouldn't have been able to get if we'd have stepped, if we'd have kept it a race conversation.
Looks like that one's going to hit for the courts. It seems that's it'll right. make it out of the legislature, but into the courts. I want to get, I know you want to talk about the presidential election before we leave. So what do you think? A wild season.
Well, on the presidential race, America is going to have to decide is if it's going to birth this baby. Is America going to commit an abortion? A long time ago, hate and racism seeds were conceived inside America, and it's ramped up when Obama became president.
Right.
And they fueled this thing, and now they've birthed a Trump and a Trump movement.
Right.
That's filled with hate and racism. So now, will America birth this baby, or will America put it to bed?
I don't know if I buy that analogy because the baby's here. No, I mean, I mean, it was in an orphanage somewhere, yeah. And when Obama made it to the presidency, there's a baby here, But we denied it for so long. When you think about it. Mm-hmm. This was the whole level playing field argument. Mm-hmm. A lot of people didn't think there was a problem anymore. And now you see the extent of some racist sentiments in the country.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And, you know, what will America do? Me personally?
What do you think they'll do? Do you think, first of all, that Trump will win the Republican nomination?
Well, I believe he'll probably get more votes than anyone else. Will they tear the Republican Party apart? Probably so.
Well, it's already starting. You see people coming out saying they won't. I mean, it's right. A pretty big name Republican saying they will not back him.
Right. So they're imploding. But it's all because this is what hate and racism does to you. It feeds off itself. When you hate it, it hates harder. You see, it feeds off itself. So you have to make a decision.
All right. Let's talk Hillary and Bernie.
Hillary and Bernie. Now, a lot of people.
Are you feeling the burn?
Well, put it this way. A lot of people ask me, you know, why haven't you endorsed someone for president and all that kind of stuff? Me personally, I haven't seen the appropriate ask. What I've been asking is for several specific things for the black community. I don't believe we should ever vote for anybody unless we know what we're going to get in return. What is the return on investment? A lot of people have floated around the idea of having Mr. Castro be the vice president. I say, well, if you're going to depend on black folks to get you across the finish line.
And she definitely did.
Right. And you're going to need that support all the way to the finish line. And you can't win without black folks. Well, why aren't you opening up doors and continuing the Obama legacy in a visual form by appointing a black vice president?
What do we know? We don't know yet that she won't. But you're feeling that she probably won't?
Well, I want to see the commitment. If she commits to that, or if Bernie commits to that, and several other specific things that keep us in the conversation, because if we are allowed to let the same thing happen that happened after the Civil Rights Movement, where black folks got everybody the right to vote, and then we were leapfrogged, gay rights went ahead of us, immigrant rights, even animal rights were put ahead of black rights after the Civil Rights Movement. Now, you know, we can't allow that to happen again.
Well,
when we toted all the water to make this stuff happen in the first place.
You know, we had a little high-tech thing going here. We were live streaming on Facebook, so I want to thank you for bringing in the high-tech atmosphere here in the studio.
You didn't respond?
We still have a minute left.
Yeah, you're not going to respond to that? That makes sense, right?
The what?
Look at the Civil Rights Movement, right?
Well, yeah, I agree.
And then other interests jump forward.
I agree. And then there's the reality that we are no longer the biggest minority. So there are some real strategic decisions that are going to have to be made over the next couple of years. I agree with you totally. I just wonder, you know,
but as far as voters are concerned, we may not be, but as far as voting population, we are the number one minority voting population.
Right.
So when it comes to voting, there's no other group that votes more than black folks.
It'll be interesting. You have me more intrigued than ever to see who her VP pick is.
Right. So
if she gets the nomination.
And does she respect the black vote? Or does Bernie Sanders respect the black vote? We'll see.
Keith of Stamps. Keep up the good work. You got to come back, man.
Hey, anytime. Just let me know.
All right.
Hey, tell my friends on Facebook. Goodbye.
Huh? Goodbye. Goodbye to the Keith of Stamps friends on Facebook. And come be my friend, Dwayne Doty, Facebook. All right, now. We'll be back with Money Man Jim Griffith.
When you connect the dots too early, you can easily miss the real story, the whole story. Connections and nuance go missing. At Morning Edition, we focus on collecting the dots before we try to connect them. Only then do we consider what it all means together. Listen each weekday. It's Morning Edition from NPR News.
Catch Morning Edition weekdays at 6 a.m. on Cooling Current, WJSU.
It may seem that the backwoods of New England and the streets of one of America's toughest cities have little in common. But all across the country, people are passionate about the place they live. From the Ozarks to the desert of Washington State, we'll take you around the country to look at what makes community in these United States. That's this season, State of the Reunion.
Catch NPR's State of the Reunion Sundays at 9 p.m., always current, WJSU 88.5.
Welcome back. Most folks I know have been enjoying the low gas prices. It leaves us with more disposable income to spend on other things or to stash away some savings, like I should be. But are those bargain prices wreaking havoc on the economy in other ways? Joining us now to talk about this issue is our money man, Jim Griffith. Welcome back, Jim.
Thank you, Dwayne.
We've missed you, Jim.
Well, I missed you too.
Okay. Now, tell us about the gas prices, because for drivers, we know this is good news, but it's hurting. It's doing some damage in other sectors.
Yes. Low gas prices right now are really, really benefiting the consumers. They're really loving it. I'm loving it myself.
Me too.
But when it comes to actual corporate profits, it's actually hurting profits. Low oil prices have caused the price of the dollar to go up. That's affecting our imports. That's affecting corporate profits.
Some jobs, I guess.
Jobs also along in the area of all the oil services industry. So when you get into the total picture, it's good for the consumer, but in many ways it's bad for the economy.
Yeah, I heard a story about how some airlines were hurting because those first class tickets aren't selling in Texas the way they used to.
The main thing that caused the situation is shale oil production got to the point to where it actually created a surplus of oil on the market. In the United States, we actually had about 1 million barrels surplus per day compared to what we're using. So because of that, the Saudis actually ramped up their production because they didn't want to lose market share.
Now there's a glut.
Right. Now we have a glut. We have every oil tanker is full. The storage tankers are full. So now what's happening is the refineries are actually shutting down the offshore drilling platforms to try to control the oil supply.
And you were telling me before, and I've been reading, that nuclear deal with Iran has is affecting this area as well.
Absolutely. A part of the covenants of that nuclear deal was that once Iran met certain requirements, they would be able to start selling their oil back on the open market. They've met those requirements. Sanctions have been in place for probably 2 or 3 years. They are scrapped for cash.
Yeah, they need that money.
They do. So they're going to start out initially, as I was told, about 500,000 barrels a day, step that up to 1 million barrels, and could very possibly move up to 2 million barrels a day.
Well, I have mixed feelings, but I need to know. How long are the gas prices going to stay low?
That's a good question. What I can say is that the price of a barrel of oil is going to stay. Well, let me rephrase that. Oil production we're going to continue to have a glut on the market. But what the oil companies are actually doing is shutting down oil platforms. And we can expect this to continue as far as the low gas prices, I think. Probably for another year, year and a half, they'll probably inch back up a bit. But the total global oil glut, we can expect this to continue for another 3 or 4 years.
That's amazing, because I remember when gas was looking at $4. You know, it really does make a huge difference. Now, Jim, you're back. And why not you want to talk about China? You always want to talk about China, Jim.
I talk about China because China has really been the manufacturing hub of the world.
Right.
We have lost our automobile industry to China, along with a number of other industries.
Right.
The manufacturing jobs are what has created the middle class in this country. The middle class is what pays the taxes and our kids to school.
It's been dying for a while, though.
Right. And at this particular point in time, we really, I would say, don't have a middle class.
Not all of it, but is much of it went to China, right?
Much of it, exactly, went to China, because we have basically, in America now, we are a consumer and service-based economy. And that is what China is in the process of doing, transferring from a manufacturing base to a consumer and services-based economy. And that's why we have these problems in the market where they drop down and lost 40 or 50% of their value, because they're having to make these adjustments.
And you know what else is interesting? Because they have gone through what it took us decades to go through, and they went through really quickly, they're suffering all those industrial malaise problems like pollution, which was real big during the Olympics. You saw everybody with the masks.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's one of the main reasons they're in the process of transferring from that manufacturing base, because we had the Pacific Trade Agreement.
Yeah, what has been the impact of that TPP?
Yeah, TPP basically is going to move. The impact is that it's causing China now to move from the manufacturing base to these 14 countries in the TPP.
Right.
So we're going to see that shift, if you will, and during the process, as far as the U.S. markets go, it's going to create a tremendous amount of volatility. We're going to see currency devaluations, and we very well could possibly see some deflation in the system as well.
Wow. And how's that going to affect the world economy?
The deflation is going to be global if it does happen. And basically what that's going to simply mean is that the price of all the goods and services are just going to drop down.
Real quick, I know you were telling me you had some advice. I mean, the market really, the year started off horrendously. I mean, there was enormous loss in the market. You were saying that people who need that stability should have already moved into bonds.
Exactly. Best advice I can give a person is that if you're a younger person, you can afford to ride this thing out. You're 20s, 30s. You have time to make this money back. For those people that are in their latter 50s or 60s, along that nature, hopefully you made that transition from equities into bonds so that you could preserve your actual wealth. So,
and for those who didn't, we need friends like Jim Griffith. I'll be calling on you, Jim.
Well, thank you very much, Wayne. I'll be here to help.
I want to thank you for joining us. It's really great to have you back. And you'll be here every week, so.
We'll be here.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Don't forget to catch Metro Morning Live tomorrow morning at 7 and 10. That's on JSU-TV, Comcast Channel 14. And join me again Monday at 4 for the full spectrum. Oh, let me say one more thing. Dale and Meredith, Dale Morris and Meredith Harrison, when you hear that theme song at the beginning, that's Dale pumping that bass and Meredith singing. Thank you so much. Thank you.